Hi! Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Today's sponsor is Mary Jo McGuire. She's been Minnesota Ramsey County Commissioner since 2012. In addition to serving as the chair of the county's legislative committee, Mary Jo is the vice chair of the Health Services Committee, Human Services / Workforce Solutions Committee, and of the Regional Railroad Authority. Commissioner McGuire also serves on the Budget, County Facilities, Public Safety and Justice, and the Public Works, Parks, and Solid Waste Committees. Mary Jo also co-founded Roseville, Minnesota's Optimist Club with Don Salverda, where today's mentoring guest spoke at in 2017. I was enthralled during Kit Welchlin's presentation about communication at the Roseville Optimist Club. He was accompanied by a few of the characters he describes in his books. He generously shared his two volumes of the communication kit with the entire audience. I just thought that was the most generous gift outside of Oprah's giving a car to everybody.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the program.
Ah, it's great to be here.
Yeah. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great.
Yeah.
Energized. We're just about done with winter here in Minnesota. Just four more weeks to go and it starts warming up.
Yeah. Can't wait. I'm going to get out of here for a little while. Go to Florida.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Kit began public speaking at the age of 9, as you might remember from our previous conversation. And by 16, he was organizing and facilitating presentations on leadership, citizenship, community service, and motivation for the 4-H and future farmers of America. Kit Welchlin purchased his first manufacturing company at age 21, and by 26 served as CEO and chairman of the board of 3 manufacturing companies in 3 states. He's been an instructor with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, where he's been repeatedly nominated Outstanding Faculty. He is a professional member of the National Speakers Association, where I met him many years ago. I think it's decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been there a long time.
Yeah. Well, you look the same. You look terrific.
Well, thank you.
Since 1991, Kit has delivered more than 3,000 speeches and seminars to more than 500,000 people. Kit has a Bachelor of Science degree in speech communication with a minor in business administration, which has been very helpful in his other life.
It has been. Yeah, it's always nice to be able to read and understand financial statements and to understand what your banker or your accountant or people that support your business idea are doing and saying to make it easier to work together.
Yeah. We also learned in our first conversation the idea of where your characters came from in your book through the movie Multiplicity.
Yes, Multiplicity with Michael Keaton. And then a one-act play called Where Have All the Lightning Bugs Gone that I did when I was a senior in high school.
And we're going to continue our conversation. We were talking about how to manage difficult relationships. And you had mentioned a book that you read, Communicating Today, and how to repair. There was a repair model that you had learned, and there were like 27 different ways in which a person needs to...
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of two things. Repetition in a way that isn't necessarily repeating, but it's being redundant. So consistent with the message, even though the delivery might be just a little bit different, but it's the consistency of the new communication pattern that you want to create in a relationship that you're struggling with. And in that book, Communicating Today claimed it was somewhere around 27 consecutive repetitions of a new communication behavior to form that pattern. And so in a different book called The Interpersonal Communication Book by Dr. Joseph DeVito, had a repair model, which is an acrostic for recognize what the problem is and engage in productive communication and pose possible solutions, affirm each other, and integrate into normal behavior, where the 27 consecutive repetitions comes into play. to make sure that we are consistent and that we have practiced in a way the new communication strategy until it's become that first choice instead of a chosen communication strategy.
And you mentioned that you're the one, you know, the person who wants to change the relationship mm-hmm. is the one that's doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of like dancing. If you want to dance a different dance step, you might step on people's toes a little bit until they move their feet, and then they will be dancing with you. So we really can't expect people to change if they see no benefit in it. But if we do see that the relationship could be better if we change the communication dynamic, and often it's what we say and how we say it and when we say it, that context that has quite a bit of an impact on the content. So if we're diligent and thoughtful about how we want to change that relationship, it starts with us. We wish they would change, but they probably won't unless we, you know, are vulnerable enough to engage in those productive communications where you might say, I've noticed that, you know, this happens when I mention this, or I'm uncomfortable when, and would like that to change. And so a lot of that openness and honesty is important to make sure that that new communication pattern matches what you hoped it would be after you put forth the effort to create that new kind of habit, in a way, and how you interact with them.
Yeah. In each relationship, you know, some people are very receptive, like easy to repair a relationship
if you mess up. Yeah, you know, and really it comes down to people have kind of the same four intentions, especially in professional relationships. They want to get things done.
Yeah.
And so we focus on getting it done, or they might want to get things done right. So we want to make sure we have some attention that we pay to the details and every I dotted, every T crossed. It should be nice if we could get along, you know, since we're going to be working cooperatively on whatever effort or business task that we have that we are working cooperatively to meet. And then, you know, it should be nice to get appreciation for the hard work and the effort that we put forth. So if we really listen to people that are starting to become difficult, it's usually that they're fearing that one of those intentions, get it done right, get along, or get appreciation, is at risk of being fulfilled. And so I call it the magic pixie dust, that in our conversations, whether they're on the phone or face-to-face or right before we hit send on the email, we just double check to make sure there's something in our message that addresses we're going to get this done. It's going to get done well, if not perfectly well. We get along, and I appreciate you. So I suggest to my clients, before you hang up the phone, you just say, well, we started on time and finished on time, and I thought it went very well, and I sure enjoyed working with you, and thank you so much for coordinating this meeting. And then I ask, how long does it take to say those four things? And I say, I timed it. It only takes 6 seconds. 6 seconds. So if you had 50 phone calls in a day, it would only take 5 minutes out of your day to sprinkle the magic pixie dust. So we'll get this done. We'll get this done right. We got along, and I appreciate you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you might spend the other 9 hours and 55 minutes of the day dealing with people that become attention-seeking, forceful, demanding, approval-seeking. Yeah. 5 minutes of sprinkling the magic pixie dust is fun. 9 hours and 55 minutes of dealing with people that have become difficult is exhausting.
Right.
And I say, well, it's just a suggestion, but I'd rather be proactive than reactive in my relationships, and to make sure that people know that we'll be just fine. This will turn out just fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, when in our conversations on the podcast, one of the things I wanted to mention is that often I refer to books. And the reason is I think that's where almost all my mentors have come from, whether it was in business or in the professional speaking business or real estate investing. I read about people that started with very little in any of the industries that I'm interested in and did not give up and made some choices that made all the difference. And so I don't really have time, and I don't want to waste anybody's time tracking people down. I'm willing to do the work to read it, to understand it, to practice it, to polish it until it's something that I can count on too, and then I share it with my audiences. So I don't share a concept until I know it can be developed into a skill that actually works.
Yeah.
So there's things I'm working on right now that maybe several years from now might end up in a seminar or a speech, but I'm not sure if they work consistently, so we'll just have to wait and see.
You're going to polish it first.
But I better practice what I preach. And I think people can tell the difference between whether you just read a book on it or if you actually have done it.
Yeah.
And I think people recognize that when you tell a story, you were there, and that was the conversation. And then they don't doubt that information. And when you're open and honest enough, when people ask you a question about something you're not sure of, and you say, I don't know, I haven't studied that, or and I'm not going to speculate, then it kind of reinforces what you did tell them, that you did know for sure, probably was.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what comes across in your book, that you've done a lot of research and a lot of reading, and you have consolidated.
There's a 14-page bibliography in that book. My friends sometimes say the bibliography has more content than the book. But I entitled that Books That Have Affected the Way I Think, and because that's where my mentors were. They were in the books.
Well, and to distill everything down takes a lot of looking at, like you were talking a little bit about how you prepare, that you spend like 8 hours of preparing before you give a presentation.
Eight hours. Yeah, so I guess if you took a look at that bibliography, there's got to be about 400 sources in that book. And so that'd be probably, on the average, probably 8,000 pages. Would that be right, if my math is correct? And I'd distill it down into, you know, about 80 pages of real content that is cleverly disguised as a 250-page book. My whole job, I think, is to get a broad understanding of the topic that I've been asked to create a seminar for a client, and then try to figure out how I can distill that information into action steps or action items or strategies that will work if they put them to work. And from when I do the reading until I get to that event, I've got to do the work myself so that I can share real-world examples that it does work.
So tell us a little bit about after your speaking engagement, how do you prepare or take your learnings from that speaking engagement, and what do you do with it? What's kind of your ritual for learning?
Oh, you know, there's some presentations I spent, you know, maybe several days creating that I never delivered again. It was just a unique circumstance for a client and presented at one time, and wouldn't be something that we could transfer to a different industry or any other circumstance. There's some presentations, you know, out of the, you know, 20 or so different topics that I speak on, that some of that information is boilerplate. It hasn't changed. It's a foundation to work from that maybe in our presentation on building effective work relationships, 75% of it simply never changes. That's just the way it is. That's the approach to take. And that the other 25% of that content needs to be customized or personalized to that client.
Mm-hmm.
So in their situation with their customer, with their coworker in their industry, this is how they would say it and do it. So that's part of my job, is to make sure that I understand what they do. And, you know, usually there's quite a long conversation or two before the event. I ask for information that I need to read and review. And I want people sitting in the audience to kind of wonder, did he used to work here? does he have an office down the hall? But I don't drop names. I don't put anybody on the spot. And one of the reasons that video blog has worked so well is that I tend to book my presentations months in advance, so I know the issues that they are facing, and I can script and put together the scenarios that the struggling image of me will introduce that topic, and then I will address it with him, and then nobody in the audience feels like they've been singled out, and they kind of watch along with it with me and kind of see them, everybody in the audience kind of sees themselves in the struggling guy, and then they kind of feel comfortable with the discussion because I've already opened it up and was, you know, kind of lighthearted and silly about it. So there really isn't a risk anymore,
right,
to delve into the topic and get better at what we need to fix.
Mm-hmm. You take an uncomfortable topic and make it comfortable for people.
I can take a very sensitive topic and make it lighthearted and approachable.
Yeah.
It works well. Through those video blogs. Yeah. It seems to work well.
We'll have that in the show notes so people can check it out. I also wanted to talk about, I've been procrastinating on it. Procrastination. It's the last chapter in your book, I think.
It should be.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's a number of reasons why we procrastinate, and one of the video blogs, the title is Why Do I Procrastinate? I point out 17 different reasons why we procrastinate. But that, in general, though, I usually talk about the top three, and one of those is perfectionism. And I think perfectionists say, do it right the first time or don't do it at all. Well, there's a recipe for procrastination. So I suggest that, you know, some things need to be done perfectly. Everything else doesn't. And then I apologize to the perfectionists in the room that they just threw up in their mouths. But if I'm laying in a hospital bed and the doctor and nurse are discussing, now, is that 5 cc's or 50 cc's? I'm going to say, hey, would you double check that? I want that to be exactly right.
Right.
But if my chicken is warm and I was hoping it'd be hot in my meal at the hospital, I'm not going to get real wound up about that because that's good enough. So sometimes we have to really take a good hard look at all the tasks and all of the roles and responsibilities that we have and which things really need to be done as well as we possibly can and what other things can we just today do good enough. And usually it comes down to negotiating the 3 Q's, quickness, quantity, and quality. And if quickness, you know, the deadline's moved up, well, then quantity and quality may have to adjust. Or if quantity is increased, well, that's going to take a little bit more time, or the quality isn't going to be as good. And if quality has to be higher, well, that's going to take more time, and the quantity will have to be less. So sometimes when we wish it could be perfect, between quickness, quantity, and quality, it may not be. So perfectionism is one of those issues. And then I tell a little story about I did give a perfect presentation one time back in 1993. And I still remember it like it was yesterday. It was at the Maplewood Mall, at the Maplewood Inn by the Maplewood Mall. And it was a 3-hour presentation on interpersonal communication skills. And I wanted to take a break every hour on the hour. And I'd say, it's time for us to take a break. And I'd look at my watch and the second hand would just be sweeping by exactly an hour. I never got tongue-tied in 3 hours. Everything I said that was supposed to be funny, I was hilarious and everything I said they should take seriously. They wrote it down, 30 evaluations, 30 tens. It was perfect. And I remember walking out under the awning at that little motel. And I took a look in the sky to see if there was a cloud thing for sure. I was going to get hit by lightning. I drove exactly 55 miles an hour on my way home. My hands are trembling. It was so uncomfortable to give a perfect presentation. I made sure it never happened again since. Then another reason we procrastinate is based upon something called the pain-pleasure principle. Maybe we have a new form we have to fill out. First time we fill out that form, we make 7 mistakes, and then we have to fill the form out next month, and we go, oh, I'm terrible at filling out that form. And we fill it out, and this time we make 4 mistakes, and we say, oh, I'm not getting it. And actually, it's getting better. And then the next month, we might make a mistake, but we might fill that form out for the next 8 months of the year. And every time we think about filling out that form, because the initial experience was so painful, we just don't want to do it. We put it off, even though we've become very good at it. So overgeneralization is that we had a negative experience the first few times we attempted something, and then we just think of that, you know, before we do that task again, and we just kind of put it off for no real good reason, because we've mastered it now, but that initial experience wasn't very pleasant. And then I tell a little story that I was in a play in high school called The King and I, where the king shouts at the school teacher, if I shall sit, you shall sit. And I got a little tongue-tied that first night. And yeah. And so all the letters were SH. Anyway, something liberating about saying that in front of 160 people. And I stayed in character and stormed off the stage. The school teacher character, she had tears in her eyes, you know, trying to stay in character. And play was sold out the next 3 nights, so didn't really affect the ticket sales. But whenever I get around words like that, I slow down because I know there's a chance. So overgeneralization is that we've had a negative experience, and then we just kind of put off doing that task because, you know, at first it was painful, even though we're pretty good at it now. And then the other reason we procrastinate is catastrophic fantasy. We think about what's the worst thing could possibly happen. And I believe it's not doing something. That's the worst thing that could possibly happen. I mean, catastrophic fantasy is that, you know, you think about what's the worst thing that could happen. And by not doing something, you create that, I think.
Yeah.
So we need to be action-oriented. Just be willing to calculate the risk and do what you can to prevent the negative consequences and move forward.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's all we have to work with right now. Just move forward.
Yeah. I focus on the next best thing.
Yeah, there'll always be failures. I mean, 1 out of 20 times, one time I read 19 out of 20 times, human beings are successful. So the, you know, odds are in our favor. You know, 95% of the time it goes our way, but that 1 in 20 times sure stings. We don't forget it. And it always haunts us as a past failure. But, you know, if we were to keep score, most of the time it goes our way.
Yeah.
But we distance that because we don't want to be braggers. We don't want people to perceive us as being conceited or arrogant. But we've done great things. In a little seminar on self-esteem, I have people write a past accomplishments reference, 25 success stories from when they're a little bitty kid till now. Any award, certificate, plaque, trophy, ribbon, acts of kindness, volunteerism. And you don't put it outside your office and people have to read it to see how cool you are. And then you'll talk to them. It's just for your eyes only. So the next time you face a challenge or obstacle in your life, you pull out a list of 25 success stories where you're the heroine or hero in every one of them. And you'll see you've accomplished great things. And this is just an opportunity to get something else on that list. So it gives us the confidence to make some tough decisions and to take some different action. But, you know, you see it for yourself that you have a long track record of success. This is just another opportunity to prove it.
Yeah, that's great. Thank
you for that. So in procrastination, let's talk about the 5 ways to break it. First, okay. You have to make a commitment and handwrite a contract. And making a commitment, just like if you gave up smoking or drinking, you're just like, I'm not going to do it anymore, and you don't. Just like procrastination, you got to do the same thing. I'm action-oriented. I make decisions. I'm decisive. I move forward. So you got to get honest with yourself, handwrite it in your own handwriting so you can read it because you'll probably believe you're going to do it then. That's part of the commitment. You hand-wrote it. And there's all sorts of contracts in our personal, professional life. You just have to write one for yourself. Then you have to get honest with yourself about what it's costing you. And in your personal life, you ever wonder why your friends don't call? Because you never used to show up. Or you remember when your children would say, hey, let's go out to Valley Fair. And you say, yeah, let's do that someday. And their little faces slide off their skull because, you know, they can see on the calendar there's a Saturday and there's a Sunday, but there's no someday on the calendar. So, you know, and what does it cost you in your career to delay getting that degree or getting certified in that particular skill? So you got to get honest with yourself personally and professionally. What is it costing you? So if you could go back 12 months or 5 years or 10 years, kind of a difference could that have made? So don't let that happen over the next 12 months or next 5 years. Get on a list of things to do today and get it done. So then you have to set flexible time management where you have free time that you've earned it through good time management. You might have an hour on a Tuesday afternoon. You're not responsible to anybody for anything. So that you've earned that time to schedule a meeting for yourself, to maybe do some thinking or brainstorming or read a book, but you've earned it. You got to have that flexible time for yourself. Free time, guilt-free time, but also free time to focus on what you do believe to be the best use of your time. You're not procrastinating. You earned it. And then you have to reward yourself daily. Don't procrastinate the reward. You can't put off the reward that I'm going to go somewhere warm on an exotic vacation in March. No, it's got to be today. So, well, the way I manage procrastination is when I deliver a presentation, I make 2 phone calls. Call people back usually, but I have a list of people I will call that I would like to work with. And I've been able to stay in business for 27 years. I always show up and always call people back. And then I get my treat. So this month, it's Russell Stover French Mints. There's only 60 calories in that little cube of chocolate heaven. I put them in the refrigerator because I think they taste better, cooler. So when I deliver a seminar, I make 2 phone calls, I get my treat. And then the next month, the rotation is to the fun size Snickers, the one you usually buy at Halloween.
Yeah.
You can buy them all year round. Yeah. I put them in the freezer because I believe they stay fresher longer, but don't bite them right away because they're like little bitty bricks. They'll break your dental work. But next month, then when I deliver a seminar, make 2 phone calls, I get a little fun size Snickers. And then, because I'm kind of cheap, the next month I go to the Andes Mints because I can buy those for $1.44 a box at my local grocery store. They kind of taste like wax, but still motivates me. So I put in variety in that it's not the same reward, you know, month after month after month, and I switch it up, but it's connected to an activity that's important to my business success. Now, I don't need to make those phone calls because I'm pretty well booked through next March, and that's, you know, 13 months from now. But the reason I'm pretty well booked into next March is because I call people back and I show up. So, you know, the horse or the cart, well, it doesn't matter. Those are 2 things that I just simply need to do that guarantee that that's the bare minimum and that my business can continue.
Mm-hmm.
And everything above that is a luxury.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's that simple. And then the last step in breaking procrastination was called the 5-minute rule. Soon as you catch yourself sliding a project off to the side, drag it back and focus on it for 5 minutes. And then hard schedule when you're going to go back and finish that project. But what's interesting about that 5 minutes of incubation time is it seems like it's enough time that it stimulates the subconscious mind to continue to dwell on that project, even though consciously over the next several hours you're doing something else. But what's amazing is when you come back later and that project usually takes 2 hours, you knock it out in an hour and 15 minutes. That letter you try to draft usually takes a half an hour. It seems like you only had to write it one time in 10 minutes. It was done. So the way I describe it is, let's say that this weekend you can't sleep. And so you have a TV in your bedroom and you're watching an old movie and that person you live with is sleeping there next to you. So you elbow them and they wake up and they say, oh, you couldn't sleep. No, I couldn't sleep either. You know? And that way you're watching a movie. And you go, isn't that naughty? But anyway, you're watching an old movie and there's an actor on there. You say, what's his name? And that person you live with is saying, yeah. And they can't think of that person's name either. And you think, I should know that person's name. And then the next morning you're taking a shower and all of a sudden you think, Mike Connors, he had a TV show on CBS called Mannix. Peggy was his secretary. Someone drove a cougar. And you're trying to think, how in the world can I remember that the next morning? But at the time, I couldn't grasp what that person's name was, let alone all those other details. But when you focus for about 5 minutes or so, it's enough time for the subconscious mind to say, okay, I'll take a look at that until you're ready for the information. And it goes through the file cabinets of your mind, thinking about, oh, yeah, I remember when you took that radio and TV broadcasting class in college. You know, remember when you just got done milking cows and you'd come in to watch Mannix and, you know, and it just kind of pieces it all together. And then when your mind is ready, it delivers the message and the information that you were struggling to get. It's like when you have a conversation with somebody and then you get in the car, you're almost home and you go, oh, you know what I should have said?
Right.
You know, yeah, I have those you thought all about the time. It, thought about yeah. it, then you released it. And then all of a sudden those thoughts came back. So that's part of the magic of the breaking procrastination is you catch yourself procrastinating, you drag it back and focus for 5 minutes, you hard schedule when you're going to finish it. So you're catching the bad behavior and you are recording or making a commitment to yourself that you're going to finish it at a specific day and specific time. And if you practice those five steps, usually you can break procrastination or at least manage it. And that's the key, is managing it. We can all procrastinate. We just have to minimize the damage.
Yeah. Well, we started on time. We ended on time.
Very nice. It's been a pleasure working with you.
You've been a delight. You've shared all this wonderful information from us.
Well, thank you very much.
For us. And also, you know, we're going to be taking some notes. And this is, I can apply this right now.
Good. Yeah. I think, you know, I usually speak on things that I struggle with. So, I get the benefit of my research and then practice and sharing with my audiences. It's information I need. It's skills I need to develop. So I find it valuable too.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's nice to be invited. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, videographer, brother from another mother. Thank you for another episode, and thanks everybody for tuning in and gaining some tips. All right, this is Monday morning. Get out there, put these ideas into action. See you next time.